It's worth it. All right. Sounds good. So first of all, definitely want to thank the elders for giving us the opportunity to be before you guys present a lesson. And I hope that y'all are able to get what I was able to get out of it by making a lesson. So today's lesson is going to be over the strength of our faith, or rather, what does strong faith look like? To even get a grasp of this, we have to start in Hebrews 11, verse 1. And just so you know, all of the verses that are just, they're just going to be like that. So it's not going to be up there. So in Hebrews 11, verse 1, we're going to learn what just faith by itself is. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." In sort of like a layman's terms, "Now faith is the confidence of things hoped for and the belief in things not seen." Now, this, if you don't take it standalone and you pair this with the very next book, James chapter 2 and verse 14, which you'll read, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith and does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things necessary for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." So by pairing these two together, you see that not only can you just accept Christ into your soul and you're saved, and that's all you have to do, there's some works in the kingdom that need to be done for you to express by your faith. And over my time of being a Christian, I've kind of steered away from looking at, this is sound kind of maybe iffy, of Christ as that example, because when I was younger, I used to think, well, that's just unattainable. I can never be Christ. Right? So I usually steered more towards people who, like Stephen, were very Christian-like, but not Christ. So these two examples are going to be doing that same kind of mindset. So the first example is going to be in 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. In 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, this is an example that you might be familiar with, but you may have forgotten it. So in chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, "Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, carried off a little girl of the land of Israel, and she worked in service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, 'Would that my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He could cure him of his leprosy.' So Naaman went and told his lord thus and spoke to the girl of the land of Israel and the king of Syria. And the king of Syria said, 'Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel.'" Right? So just that alone, you take that as an example, and you see that this girl was already shining with her faith. First of all, because they could have at any point in time stopped her from speaking and said, "What are you talking about? If your prophet could cure Naaman of his leprosy, if you could do that great work, why are you captured by us? If your God is the true God, why do we have you?" Right? And also, in the time of Syria, it is pretty likely that if a servant girl spoke out to her master without being asked a question, she did run the risk of persecution. They don't need her. Her life has moots. It's worth nothing. You put that in perspective of how we live our lives today. If you go to work and you put that Christian lifestyle aside so that you fit in with your group, you're trading your God for them. You're not running the risk of persecution. No one in work is going to slaughter you right then and there because you're living a Christian lifestyle. If you then go to work and you show that Christian lifestyle and you don't slide it away because it might be more convenient for that time frame, and you do happen to lose a friend, person is never your friend. Person that goes up to you and says, "You know, I realize that you stopped cursing, and I realize you stopped laughing at the jokes that we're making in our groups, and you're no longer eating around us because you know that's what we're talking about," and they leave you, what did you lose? A temptation? A bad habit that's sitting around you? Rather, more likely what's going to happen is that they're going to see you not laughing at those jokes anymore, not eating with them. And curiosity might get the better of them. To where you have now an opportunity to show someone what you should have been showing them from your first day of work, what you a Christian lifestyle. So this example in 2 Kings, it shines even brighter when you read all the way to Luke chapter 4, verse 27. She's mentioned once again in Luke chapter 4, verse 27. And it reads, "And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of the prophet Elisha, but none of them were cleansed, but only Naaman the Syrian." That's huge. If you remember what she said, "Would that my God were with the prophet in Israel, he could cure Naaman of his leprosy." There's no way that she could have seen that prior to that, and there's no way she saw that after that. So she's showing her faith by having no evidence of that whatsoever, of that miracle being done. And that's what we're kind of asked to do today. In Luke chapter 4, verse 27, which is what we just read, in John chapter 20, verse 29, this is what we're called to have. So in John chapter 20, verse 29, this is what she shows perfectly by having no prior examples and no future examples to look at, but to show that faith amongst people who have captured her, have taken her out of her comfort zone, right? And are holding her as a servant girl. So in John chapter 20, verse 29, Jesus is, around this time, Jesus has been resurrected. He's got the scars on his hands, but Thomas isn't necessarily believing him, and he wants to see the scars. Jesus takes him aside and makes him touch the scars. Thomas is then saying, "My God, my Lord," he's now admitting that, yes, this is Christ. So this is Christ talking to Thomas, and Jesus says to him, Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed." That is what we are called to do, and that is what she did perfectly. Okay. So the main point from her is the confidence. Right? Blessed are those who have the confidence to speak out in my namesake, for you haven't seen anything. The next example is going to be Noah, which I want to turn to Hebrews 11 and verse 7. In Hebrews 11, verse 7, we're going to break this down, but we're going to read it through for the first time. You're going to read, "By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith." The similarities between this sentence and our lives are extraordinary. Let's replace Noah with us. "By faith we, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of our household." We're not building an ark. "But we have been warned by God concerning events yet unseen, that this world will cease to exist. Like a thief in the night, he's going to come, and that's it. Out of reverent fear, constructed an ark. Out of reverent fear, we lived Christian lives. We talked to others when it wasn't convenient. We lived a Christian life amongst peers who may be turned against us. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness." That comes by faith. Every time that you do live that Christian lifestyle, people may not like you. And that is because by your actions as a Christian, you are condemning their lifestyle. As simple as that. That's why they might not want anything to do with you. It's because they can't live their lifestyle and you live your lifestyle without this feeling of you're watching them. You don't approve of what they're doing. Right? And I've had people tell me that you have a personal problem with this. And I said, no. If the Bible didn't specifically talk on that, I would have no quarrels with it whatsoever. Right? Because who am I to speak when God hasn't spoken? So let's go back to where Noah got this spot in Hebrews 11. In Genesis chapter 5, verse 32, These three verses are kind of linked together, showing you necessarily his aging over the years. So in 532, it says, after Noah was 500 years old, Noah fathered Shem, Ham, and Japheth. You skip down to Genesis 6, 13 through 14, and it says, and God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood, make rooms for the ark, and cover it inside and out with pitch. So far he was 500 years old when he had his children, and now God has been told, or God has told Noah to build the ark. In chapter 7, verse 6, Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters came upon the earth. So you have this time span, right? He's 500 years old when he had his three sons, and at 600 years old, ark was done, the floods were coming. So somewhere within that 100 years, his sons were married, and they entered the ark. But somewhere within that 100 years, let's go with maybe 50 or 70 years, he was preaching for about that time, right? Let's say he just wasn't preaching for the first 30 years. At least 70 years of preaching, and no one else entered the ark. So wheel that back to how we live our life. When I was in high school, I preached for, like, let's say 3 years. And I say preached, what I mean by that is I talked to my friends, okay? So for 3 years, I talked to my friends, and to my knowledge, I didn't convert a single person. So after about 3 years, that did start to, like, take a toll on me, right? I just wasn't having any more of it. I was done talking to people. I wasn't necessarily going to live a unchristian lifestyle. I just wasn't going to seek people out because what I was seeing was just failure. When it really wasn't, and I know that now for sure, but then it just tore me down. When I looked at Noah and I saw that he had preached for 70 years or so, not converting a single person. The entire time, I was never being ridiculed in high school. In high school, not ridiculed for living a Christian life. People probably praised me more for it then. But he was being ripped apart for that years. People were making fun of him. Where are the floods, Noah? When are they coming? Right? And who could he turn to? Right? His family was probably being torn down the same way. They knew what was going on. But by reverent fear, he continued to live a Christian lifestyle. If I can't do that for 3 years without feeling some type of failure, but Noah can do it for 70 years, and there's no difference. There's no difference between me and Noah, or you and Noah. Our lifespan, 100 years, let's say. Right? If we can give that 100 years, the same 100 years that Noah gave by building the ark, that's all that's being asked of you. He didn't live just those 100 years. But if you think for 1 second that you're going to have to go through the same ridicule that Noah did, everyone on the face of the planet, not believing you and making fun of you for all of your lifetime, you're not. You have this as infrastructure, which he did not have. I guess if you want to say his family was, sure. But it's not just this for us. He is, again, another perfect example of John 20:29, which we've already read one time, but I'm going to read it again. In John chapter 20, verse 29, Jesus is talking to Thomas. Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." Perfect example of Noah and the servant girl thus far. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 37, I have you guys turn there. Over my years of being a Christian, I've talked to a couple of people, and I've realized that one of the biggest hurdles is when they stop, they take a step away from you, and they say, "I can't believe you." And you might ask them, why? Why can you not believe me now? Why the sudden cutoff? And they say, because if I believe you, then I have to also believe that my mom or my grandmother or my granddad or my dad, they're not going to heaven. And that's a hurdle that I can't relate to because my family are all Christians. I can understand that you're feeling like you're leaving a family member behind. But in Matthew chapter 10, verse 37, God knows how that feels. So much so that he put it into the Bible. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 37, it reads, "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Now this verse alone does not make it much easier, I'm sure. But for God to put that in the Bible, for the Holy Spirit to speak that into an apostle, and for Him to write that and record that for us, knows that He's understanding what you must be feeling as that person. I love how the Bible's put together, the order of it. When I talk to people, my first conversation with people when I talk to them might be something like, "Let's pretend we don't know anything." And I'll kind of walk them through the Bible and how it's layered and whatnot. But we're not going to go through that. This is another sermon for another day. But how this is put at the beginning of Matthew, they're going to read this. And it's almost like it's saying, pay attention to this, right? Because what you're about to read is going to change your life. It might disagree with some of the things that you were brought up with. But come back to this. And don't choose your earthly relatives over me. Because if you choose me, they might be coming with me. You might be able to be that example in your family to bring them along. And finally, faith is taking action. This is for us, right? In Matthew chapter 13, verses 1 through 9. In Matthew chapter 13, verses 1 through 9, I've kind of realized that over years we might pick and choose who we deem as worthy or who might be the most receiving of God's Word. And I'll give you an example. Sitting at a table, you have the guy on the left and the guy on the right. The guy on the right looks like me. He's got a full suit on, probably way better than me, right? Looks like a billionaire or whatever, okay? And the guy on the left has tattoos, no sleeve shirt, jeans, looks like he just rolled out of bed, picked out what was ever on top of his dresser, and went out for the day. And you're going to talk to one of them. And if you sit there and decide, I'm going to talk to the guy in the suit, because he's got his head on straight. He'll be thinking of what I'm saying, and he'll be understanding it. He seems like a reasonable kind of guy who's going to be receiving what I'm putting down. Instead of looking at the guy who has the tattoos, has the piercings, looks awful in your point of view, and thinking maybe he's got those things because he's trying to fill a void. What if he realizes something's missing in his life, so he's trying to grab at all these different possibilities until something fills that void? And what the one thing that he needs is the thing that you can provide on that day. Now, I'm not saying you can't talk to both of them. By all means, sit them both down. They're right there in front of you. Talk to both of them. But the sin of partiality is not something that we should take part in. So Matthew chapter 13 talks about that. In Matthew chapter 13, verses 1 through 9, it says, "The same day Jesus went out to the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered around him. So that he got in a boat and sat down, and the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, 'A sower went out to sow, and he sowed some seeds that fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on the rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. He who has ears, let him hear." So that example that I just gave you is essentially trying to imagine a sower, right, with his bag of seeds, and he's picking one seed out, and he's saying, "You're going to go right there, and you're going to go right there." How ridiculous that would be for him to walk through an entire field like that. You know full and well that he's grabbing into the bag, and he's just casting the seeds, and wherever they land, they land. That is us. You're going to your job, you're living a Christian life, that's you casting your seed. You're being that example so that people who you don't think when you're being watched, you are being watched, and they're seeing that,
And it's their choice to catch the seed and to ask you about it. If they decide to catch your seed and plant it themselves and cultivate it, then God can give the increase. I believe the verse is, Paul planted, Apollo watered, and God gave the increase. That's something that I didn't know when I was in high school, and I wish I had. Because I took it upon myself to see the growth. I'll give the increase. And that took a toll on me because I was probably a little too arrogant, which is not too far from the truth. But you going throughout your life as you casting the seed. You taking a chance every time that you get when you're on a lunch break and you sit down at a table and there are your coworkers there laughing and cutting up, and you decide, you know, maybe I'm not going to talk to all of them at once because I can't do that. Maybe that's not the gift that you have. But maybe your gift is, I've been friends with this guy for some odd years, and I'm just going to have a one-on-one conversation with him. I'm not going to say, hey, everybody, let's talk about God. And that's too much. So he talks to this one guy. I'm sure by the end of the conversation, it would surprise me if more people had not gotten involved in that conversation. But if you start with the one, that's all you're being asked to do. In Hebrews 6, verse 19, we read about an anchor. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19. And it reads this. We have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul. It's talking about the Bible. A hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf and become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So, how I've always kind of explained this was, the Bible is our anchor, right? And we're all sort of captains of our ship. And when you're baptized, you let your anchor drop. And that's where you should be. I'm sure you guys remember the feeling that when you were first baptized, that feeling like going to sleep that night, it felt great. You felt no weight on your shoulders. And over time, you may have slipped up on a couple of things. And you might have brushed them out the door, those sins, and you just, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with those. But maybe over the years, you've let a couple of sins creep in and they don't bother you anymore. You've desensitized yourself to them. By you doing that, you just kind of lifted your anchor up just a little bit. And that's all it takes. It's just one thing. Just to lift it up just a little bit. And that one thing leads to another. And before you know it, your anchor's not touching the ocean floor anymore. But you don't see that because you're on a ship. So what you don't see is you're on a ship in a vast ocean, no land around you, and you think you're still right there where you were when you were baptized. But before you know it, you've already reeled up the entire anchor, you have no idea where you're at, and your ship has been sailing far, far, farther than you could have imagined. People talk about, how do you have strong faith? And the answer is usually by remaining in a constant prayer, praying before your meals, involving God in as much in your life as you possibly can, and studying His Word. And that is true. 100% that is true. If you don't have what I call the Bible as a mirror, and you're not constantly looking at it with an open heart and understanding that, yes, there might be a couple of things that weren't there the other day that I need to change, then what good is that mirror? In Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16 is where we're going to go next. But this is what we're called to be. The salt and the light of the earth. I'm going to read this. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. That is what Noah did. That is what the servant girl did. That is what we are called to do. If nothing more than changing your life at one location at a time, but eventually to all of them. Not being complacent in, well, I'm acting like a Christian at home. And that's all that matters. Right? You're only fooling yourself. So what we've talked about is having confidence, a discernment girl, resiliency, not putting up with or not letting people's harsh words put you down, or the fact that you're living your Christian lifestyle and they're not changing their life, or they want nothing to do with you because of how you're living your life. That is nothing to be ashamed of. Blessed are those who are persecuted in my name's sake. So maybe over this time you've realized that you haven't been letting your light shine. You haven't been the salt of the earth that you have been commanded to be. And you need to change that, if not one step at a time. Or maybe you realize that you haven't been a part of this family, like Noah's family or this family, and you wish to be a part of that. You wish to not have that weight on your shoulders anymore and have that lifted off of you. We can help with that. If you come now, always stand and sing.